No Chill with Gilbert Arenas. We're back with another heat check. There's a lot of stuff going on in the NBA, but it's March Madness, so you know we got to hit that college first.
Arizona.
Y'all got us in that Pac-12 tourney.
Yeah.
Beat a significantly undermanned UCLA squad. I just want to point that out. So congrats on that.
Thank you.
That we both two C's. It is what it is. We'll go longer than y'all, but it's all gravy.
Wow.
But let's talk about you and your time at Arizona.
Uh-huh.
So
amazing.
Your two seasons at Arizona, made the tournament 2 years. First year, you were number one seed your freshman year, right? Y'all ended up going to Salt Lake City, lost to Wisconsin.
Yeah. Were we? I don't think we were number one seed.
I think y'all might have
been.
I
thought we was eight. Like eight, nine? Shit, I don't know. It's a long time ago.
I know we I think got, they were eight and they got y'all.
I think they ran us tired. Yeah.
That musty Salt Lake City air, though, probably contributed to it. But your second, your sophomore year, you guys got all the way to the championship game, made a great run, had that, that great squad, ended up seeing Jay Will and them in the championship.
The refs. We've seen the refs.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
what happened.
The refs in them.
Your favorite coach, Coach K, in that game. But I want to ask you first, what's your favorite March Madness memory?
To be honest, it's a blur.
Really?
It is. The reason it is because when you're trying to get to a goal, which we were, I remember we put a rule in that we wasn't gonna have sex until the end of the tournament. So start to, you know, after the season, going into the tournament, no sex the whole tournament.
So what, that Sunday after, the Saturday or the Sunday after?
I don't remember, just the last game. From going forward, now, tournament time, no sex.
So even, right. So after that last game, so y'all had to get it in?
Yeah. Okay. Before the last. Which was funny story in itself because, you know, now we're starting to ask questions. When you mean by sex, do you mean with the other race? You start, you know, college kids, you know, can we jack off?
Wow.
Can we get a little in? Like we're trying to figure, you know, you just gotta just, you know, you just messing with, you know, we're just messing with Lauren Woods, but, you know, like you putting all these rules in, bro, you probably don't have a girlfriend. That's why it's easier for you. Yeah. No, but we were, it was just machine-like. And when you're setting yourself for a goal, you're not really enjoying the process. So, you know, I can't tell you who we played in the first round and all. We were looking at that championship game and we were just machine like training, working, yeah. Playing, training, working, playing. So there's really no memories of did we have fun or not.
Two questions for you. What's the best part about the NCAA tournament? And what's the worst part? Best part first.
I mean, the best part would be, you know, competing against, you know, teams, you know, in other conferences, playing in big arenas, you know, of that don't know you, traveling. You know, it's you know, especially for, you know, high school kids, some kids, you know, this is the first time they've been on a plane when they get to college and to get to college.
Yeah.
So just traveling, it's just the whole part of it. You know, you feel like you're actually a rock star.
I don't know how it was for y'all, but we did mostly commercial flights. Like, we never chartered a plane. So we were flying Southwest, Alaskan. You know,
no, we never did Southwest, but yeah,
we had to go Southwest to Tucson whenever we had to pull up over there, or Southwest to Phoenix. But we had the 7-footers in the exit row, all scrunched and huddled.
UCLA?
The University of California at Los Angeles. This was back in the day, though. I think things have changed, allegedly. So they're moving a little different now.
All that alumni money y'all had?
I don't know where it was going.
Okay. All right.
It was going to Southwest tickets. We weren't even A group was the worst part. It was like B and C group, like, you know what I mean? Try to struggle to get the overhead in there and all that good stuff. But the coolest part about the tournament was that we chartered. But that was like, you know, you chartered all the flights. Because back in those days, this was before they did like the regional seating. So now they try to keep teams closer to home. But they would send our ass to Greensboro, North Carolina, Pittsburgh, like we were going to Philly, we were going to all these spots, but we had the nice Delta charter. Everybody had their own row.
Yeah, so I don't remember. See, y'all wasn't that good to have, you know, locked in mental focus to be focusing on a big goal. You probably have great college memories.
We was good enough to beat y'all, if I'm not mistaken. that nice game, Dan Gasser came back from the ankle injury, which was another crazy story. They tried to take me off a red shirt with like eight games ago in the season. I'm chilling. Like, I'm good. So what's the worst part about that whole tournament experience?
For me, it was, you know, not getting a goal. You know, losing, that's the only memory I have of college is losing that
that final game. Well, I mean, you know, getting hurt against Michigan State, which I wish I had tore it all then. Yeah. Didn't know about tore it all until I got into the NBA. But, you know, that would have helped, you know, in that championship game, you know, soft tear in the chest area. I mean, it just couldn't sleep. Yeah. Like, it was just horrible. It was just one of those first, it wasn't my first real injury, but an injury where I couldn't offset it. You know, like when I broke my right hand,
yeah.
You know, I cut the cast off and played with left and had 50.
When'd you do that?
Going into my senior year.
Of high school?
Mm-hmm.
So you had a broken hand in high school?
Yeah, I broke it right before. I broke it at Venice Beach right after Kobe did his.
Okay. Damn, and you played the whole season with the Jenkins?
No. It ended up healing. You know, okay. It's still swollen.
Okay.
but that part right there is like, you know, everything you do, like you try to reach, yeah. So it was.
So Richard Jefferson told a cryptic story about what you were doing the night before the game. He wouldn't really allude to it, but he said it was partly responsible for y'all taking the L.
Yeah.
Is he full of shit or?
No, he was full of shit because he knew I couldn't answer.
Like,
cause I'm wild. It was to be honest, it was the perfect thing to say because you're expecting the worst. Oh, he had a party, he had all this. So if I say, yo, I was hurt and couldn't sleep, everybody's like, oh, nice capping. He wouldn't have said it if it was weird, but no, I was hurting so bad, you know, couldn't sleep, couldn't do none of it. So if I can't sleep, my roommate can't sleep.
No. Who was your roommate?
Jason Gardner.
Okay.
Ain't no sleep. No.
So you up too?
Like I'm doing all of that. Yeah. Like I can't sleep.
Yeah. Back in the old days, you got to share the room and all that.
Yeah, like I'm, you know, you try to roll over. All of that was just painful. It was the worst experience.
So you said that whole experience was a blur for you. But do you remember anything in particular about that Final Four experience? And for those of us who never got the opportunity to play in a Final Four, what is that moment like for you as a college basketball player to reach the pinnacle?
I mean, it's you and three other teams, right? It's. You know, you're one game away from the big stage, two games for being champs if you win them both. So, you know, the importance of, you know, of something like that. It's like, you know, it's like a game seven in a game seven.
Yeah.
And, you know, playing against Michigan State in the fourth quarter, in the Final Four, you can see how serious we were. You know, we smacked them, the number one seed, by a dub. It wasn't even close, but that was where our mental focus was. Our hardest game was probably Illinois, if I can remember. And they gave us, they had our number, you know, during the season. I think we played them in, I don't know if it was Maui, I don't know if it was the Maui Cards, but we played them and they beat us. So, you know, going into that Illinois, I think that was the Elite Eight. And that was our closest game.
Yeah.
And, you know, Final Four, you know, when we got to Michigan State, that was easy. And, you know, Maryland and Duke. And I remember we was watching the Maryland-Duke game. And Maryland was up like 15-20 at the half. As soon as that second half started, the way that whistle was blowing, we left. Coach was like, we're going to be playing Duke. And they were still up. They were still up about 15 when Coach said this. Well, we'll be playing Duke and just bounced out.
So when he said it, you feel like Duke gets a favorable whistle in those situations?
Nah, listen, I didn't. I'm trying to get home anyway. My shit hurt. Because, you know, it's right after the game. So I'm hurting.
For sure. And what was leading up to that Final Four? What was life like for y'all on campus? You have the no sex rule. Did it become more difficult? Because the campus is turned up, everybody jocking y'all and all that good stuff.
I don't know. I didn't go to campus. Wait, hold on. Wait. You assumed I went to class.
Yeah, I heard stories about you in class.
No, that was like summer school stuff.
Okay.
That was turning the lights off. Okay. Like the first day, I'm trying to see where the honey's at. Do we got any honeys in here? And then it was like, I'm out of here.
Okay.
But no, I didn't go to class. I wasn't really on campus. I was in the gym.
The gym's on campus, though, right?
And then they have, the McHale Center. Not the McHale Center, but there was like the student, what is that called?
I don't know. Ours is called the Wynn Center, but I know what you're talking about. Like,
is that where y'all played?
So we would play games there. We play games at Poly. We also had the men's gym.
Oh, yeah, damn. Yeah. Yeah, so this was like off, this is off, across the street, but it was like where the students
all worked out.
Yeah, the students worked out. So, you know, I used to go there, play and train. So I didn't really go on campus, so I wouldn't really see what the hoopla was about. Come on, man. Do it look like I was a dude who spent his time in class? What I'm trying to be.
This you seem studious.
You're intelligent. No, but I'm talking about we got the tournament going on.
So here. No.
Earth, everything's off.
And as much as you can say, I don't want
sex to off, school's off then. Sex off, school's off.
It seemed at those times teachers would be rolling a little bit and be very understanding of what you had going on because they knew that, you know, basketball helped keep the lights on like football. So they're supportive.
I mean, I did have a 0.2, so I don't know how supportive it was.
I was just trying to track Arizona, investigated, but it's all good. You didn't take the bait.
I don't know how supportive they were.
You didn't take the bait.
I had an 0.2. I don't know who gave me the 2.
I had something like a 0.3 my very first quarter, just because somebody gave me some bad info. Like, yo, if you don't take the final, you can get a retro drop or whatever. Like, all right, cool. Did not work out.
Yeah.
Coaches were hot, to say the least. So let's talk a little bit about what led to you going to Arizona, just your recruiting process and all that good stuff. So what was that recruiting process like for you, and why did you end up picking U of A over the other schools that were pursuing you?
You know, it was pretty slow. You know, local Northridge was
Bobby Bradwell at that point.
Yeah. So I'm getting recruited by them. I mean, they're at, you know, every game they're, you know, that's where I'm going. That's who, you know, it's big school to me, big school, local. I had the experience, but I didn't really have the experience of what AAU really meant. I found more value in playing in adult leagues.
Okay.
Right? So I'm playing in adult leagues and I go play this AAU game and then I got like 45, 50. It's boring, right? So I want to play against these adults. Back then we had a team called Crush Groove. Like they were called Crush Groove. And it was like everyone, it was like, I swear to God, you would have thought there was a prison league team. Everybody yoked, like everybody, the whole damn team. Like some of the guys played, like a guy named Nate, he played at USC. Okay. So it was like, you know, filled with, you know, very high level high school players who didn't make it, some players that went overseas, so it was an adult league. They just used to smack on everybody. So, you know, I used to play against them and I just wanted to be good enough to get that jersey. So that was my first NBA jersey to me.
Okay.
Playing on Crush Groove, just yes.
Where's the league at?
Huh?
Where'd y'all play at?
They didn't play around, okay. You know, Valley College, you know, Balboa, Valley Plaza. So when I got that jersey, I never took it off. It was just, that was it.
Okay.
So I didn't really play in the AAU circuit like that. So, you know, a lot of people didn't know who I was. Only when I, like, went to, like, the Watt games and then, you know, destroy that, and then now you don't see me anymore.
Okay.
Back then, you know, there was no way to reach people, so you had to know exactly what school I went to. And no one knew nothing about Grant. So Northridge was the school that was recruiting me. And then after Crenshaw, after we played you guys, that's when, you know, like, oh, man, this. And then, you know, I started getting more, you know, USC, Mike Bibby throwing 100.
Bro, Mike Bibby, or Henry Bibby.
Henry Bibby.
Mike Bibby's dad at USC, because those are some of the first letters I got, but it'd be like 8 letters a day.
Yeah,
and it's like, all right, you're too thirsty, dog.
Yeah.
I love you. You got the UCLA bloodline, but it's like shit.
You would think that, like, that was something, but you get to the point where I think they do this to everyone. Yeah. Right? Right? It's not. I think they just do this to everyone.
It's like 8 letters in a day. First time, like, oh, I got the SC letter, but then it's like, damn, 8 letters in a day, chief?
Yeah,
I know you didn't write these. The handwriting's too nice.
Yeah.
I know somebody with impeccable handwriting wrote these.
So that, and then what happened was the guy who was recruiting me from Northridge said, oh, I'm getting a job at Kansas State. I'm gonna be the assistant. You're gonna be my guy.
Okay.
So I'm like, Kansas State? It's like Kansas, so it's the same thing, just a state. So it's in Kansas. So I'm like, all right, cool. And then sure enough, as soon as he got there, got that Kansas State letter, I'm going to Kansas State. And then DePaul came in, and then, like, out of the blue, Arizona came in. It was like, you know, we wanna come visit. Like, oh, okay. Man, I don't know who they're looking for. Yeah. they came, Lute Olson, you know, had that big championship ring.
Lute Olson pulled up on you?
Yeah.
He came to the San Fernando Valley.
Yeah, San Fernando, white hair and everything. And then, you know, when he put his hand, put his hand on the glass, and I looked at my dad like, oh, I think did he break it? Like, you know, it's like, boom, like, ooh. And then the first thing that really came out of his mouth was so truthful, it actually made me pay attention. He said, I've never seen you play. I had to watch the highlights coming here on the plane. And you're actually the type of player, you know, we're looking at. You're our third option. Coach Rodney Tension loves you. He thinks you're the number one option.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've, you know, just seen you, you know, the hour, 2 hours it took to get here. That's when, and I got to look at, you know, who you are. I'm actually interested. I forgot how that went, but something happened. You know, we, you know, cool, they left. And then it was like the season was starting up. And then they got to see me play. And I remember the first time he came, he's in the crowd. You can just see it because it's all white hair.
He came to Grand High?
No, he went to, we played Canoga.
Ooh, damn, see him. Yeah, he came all the way to Canoga.
Played Canoga.
That's real love right there.
Yeah, and I played horrible. Well, it was a horrible 29.
Yeah.
Because I missed 20 free throws.
You took 20 free, you took more than 20 free throws in that game and missed 20.
I was faster and stronger than everybody.
Was it the janky rims at Canoga High?
I don't know, just probably the nerves.
Okay.
You know, it was probably just the nerves of them. And I just, and I remember after the game, I'm just sitting there like, oh my God, I blew it. I really blew it. Like, who misses 20 free throws? Like, you know, I'm just sitting there, and I remember Ronnie Tisdale, I was just, listen, just come to the next game. I swear I have 50. I'm going to go home tonight. I'm going to go work on my free throws. He's like, don't worry, you're fine. Just don't worry, you're fine. Next game, 55, 50, 53. And I'm like, did he see the game? Like,
that was the thing back in those days. The Daily News, they always came through with the great high school stats. You know, everybody grabbed the paper, and I might have dropped a 30 piece, and I look in, I'm like, motherfucker, Gil dropped 50. So, you know, feeling sweet, like, ooh, I know I got it tonight. Like, oh, Gil had another 50 piece.
And then I remember it was like, I got a call, and they said, listen, at this point, it's you three, but now it's whoever decides first.
Okay.
So because I wasn't their first option, I was a third, so I'm still behind, you know, at that time it was Kevin, I wanted to say Kevin Gates.
Yeah.
No.
Kevin Gaines?
Kevin Gaines, yes.
Okay.
So
played with Jamal Crawford in Michigan.
So Kevin Gaines.
I didn't think about it for a second.
He
started down in L.A. I think he moved to, like, Vegas.
He was a strong kid. Yeah.
He started at Rancho Park.
Yeah, he was a big bodyguard. Yeah, so you had him, and then you had Jimmy Hayward.
Okay.
Right? So, you know, those were their, you know, the two that was in front of me. And then, so they were just coming to see me. They wasn't really saying, okay, yeah. Then I get the call and said, hey, you three, whoever decides first. So I'm like, whoever decides first? And he's like, yeah, you know, we want you to come on a visit. Yeah. Like, yeah. So I end up, I was supposed to go, I already had playing with DePaul, so I was going to go to DePaul.
Okay.
And then I was going to go like a 2 weeks or whatever. And Pat Kennedy, I guess his mother died. So he had to reschedule. So when he gave me the reschedule, I called him and said, hey, can I come now? You know, this week? And he was like, yeah, sure. Went there, had a blast.
He got game level? Like, what was that? What was the recruiting trip like? Or is it me?
I got recruited like I was a third option. I was, not by the school, by, I had Richard Jefferson and, Luke Walton as my.
They were your hosts?
They were my hosts.
So they just took that $60 and ran?
They never, I didn't leave. Like, soon as Richard said, wait, we're recruiting you? Oh my God. Because I played in every all-star game with him.
Okay.
But no one ever knew how I made the team.
Yeah.
So I was that guy that, like, I played early in the morning, like first game or the last game. So really none of the talent actually seen me, but I was damn near leading the camp in scoring every year.
Okay.
Like, you know, like just, camp yeah, I was like, camp. So it was like, if it was top 15, I was number 15.
Okay.
If it was top 20, I was number 20. If it was top 10, I was 10.
Yeah.
Right? So I was the last guy who made everything. So I never really played in there. I was just always on the team.
Okay.
Right? So we seen each other. We just never seen each other. Like, play. I seen him play. He never really seen me play.
He was dry hitting a little bit.
Yeah. So he was like, oh, he was like, what other team are you going to? I was like, oh, I got Northridge. And he was like, Northridge? I was like, yeah, I got Northridge. I got Kansas State. I got DePaul. And then us. And he was like, wait, you have Northridge, Kansas State, DePaul, and Arizona, and you're trying to figure out what school you're gonna go to? Okay. Right? It was like, surprise, process. And we went, we had a it was a game, and I played in some game, and it was like Michael Dickerson out there, Ruben Allen. I don't know how that happened, but Michael Dickerson was out there, and I remember telling Michael Dickerson, man, he's nice, man, you're nice. You should try for the basketball team. Because he was young, bro. He just thought he was a football player, right? And then when he said the name, I was like, oh, damn, he's bigger than TV.
Yeah.
And then when I got back home, I had such a great time. I mean, I just had such a great time.
Yeah.
And then I just, you know, I seen the fear in, you know, another player's eyes that I can come in here.
Take your spot, dude.
Take that spot. But I told my dad, I was like, I want to go to Arizona. And then he hit me with the, do you know who they're recruiting? He said, they got Jason Gardner. I was like, who's that? He's like, oh, he's ranked number one and two. He's number one or two point guard in the country behind another kid named Jason Williams. Okay, that's what's up. And then he was like, and then they have a JUCO player who's coming in, his name, Lamont Frazier.
Lamont.
And I was like, okay. Then he was like, and then Luke Recker's coming. I was like, okay, who's that? He was like, he's Mr. Indiana. And I was like, they said they're gonna register me. I said, what does it matter? I can learn the process, and that was the thing. Like, if you come here, we're gonna redshirt you because you're young. Yeah. We have this loaded squad. Like, cool. And I told my dad, so I went to school, and then had a like one of those things where Kansas State or Arizona. No one knew who Kansas State was, so it was the easy Arizona thing. Yeah. So I said Arizona.
So you came in. You're probably the most unheralded recruit, but those of us in San Fernando Valley knew what you were about. We was rocking with you. Except for my dad, he was kind of confused until he got to really see you in real life. But so you come to Arizona, you're the most unheralded recruit on that squad. You think you're going redshirt. At what point were you like, oh, I'm going to take somebody's spot?
Jordan Camp.
Okay.
So after our senior year, you know, we go to Jordan Camp. So
Santa Barbara?
Yep.
Okay.
So Jordan Camp has all the high-level elite. So not George Rapp. Was George Rapp's son?
Ooh.
What's George Ravlin's son's name?
I can't remember. I know George Ravlin.
Yeah, his son got me there.
Okay.
Thad and Dart.
Okay.
They got me to invite.
Thad McGrew.
Yep.
Yeah. Dart Stamps, two LA legends.
That's who got me to invite to go to Jordan camp. So, you know, I got there. Reuben Douglas, all those guys are there. So, because I was, you know, one of the youngest, nobody really knew. And MJ himself always picked damn near probably the weakest group so he can be MJ.
Yeah.
So he has, I don't even know why I just said he picked the weakest group, but, you know, he picks guys that doesn't actually want to shoot or don't demand the ball.
Okay.
So he don't know me, so he picks me. Yeah. Yeah, Sean.
What's it like for you getting picked by MJ, though?
That was amazing. Like, yeah. You know, because there's only six of us.
Yeah.
So it was me, Sean Lampley, White Mamba, MJ, Darius Miles, and Quinn Richardson.
Okay.
So you see what I mean? Like, he's not picking anybody who really demands they need the ball.
Yeah.
So, you know, so what ends up happening is, so I'm balling.
Yeah.
So I really destroyed the Jordan camp both weeks. And You know, I get when we start talking, when MJ started talking, like, yeah, you know, what's, you know, you're going to Arizona, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, but I'm going to redshirt this year. For who? I was like, well, they got a whole lot of people coming in, you know, then you have like Ruben, he goes there, he's the shooting guard. And then I heard a call happen to
MJ made the call?
MJ made the call to Luton and said, yeah, your guard here is destroying your other guard. And then he was like, let me guess, it's Gilbert destroying? He was like, yeah. He was like, there's no way you're going to be able to redshirt him. It's not even close.
Gibbs, I don't think, you know, obviously we've been doing this for a few years now. I never heard the MJ cosign. I heard y'all was busting MJ's ass and all that good stuff. Never heard the MJ cosign.
Yeah.
So what is that for you like to have Michael Jordan? Some people call him the GOAT. I'm a LeBron guy, but I'm not going to disrespect people's own personal opinions. He's your GOAT again for getting cocaine out of the NBA. Remarkable achievement. In the 80s, you know what I mean? That's like getting rid of Jerry Curls like at that time. Yeah. That's a struggle. But what is that like for you to know that Michael Jordan took time out of his life? Because I assume MJ is just busy all the time, but hand me call Lou real quick and let me check him.
I didn't look at it like that. You know, I didn't look at it like, damn, Michael Jordan plugged me, right? Because no matter what he says, I still got to really, you know, perform. You know, I don't know if it was like, yo, he's going to be starting or you need to start him. He's giving an update like, you're not going to be able to redshirt him because, you know, it's one of those. But I guess, you know, once I got there and just that voice of MJ saying, you're not going to be able to redshirt him because he's outplaying it. When practice starts, the focus is really on this matchup now.
That's real shit. That reminds me of a story by MJ and my older brother, Chris. So my older brother, Chris, was a freshman on the 95 UCLA championship team. Jordan was out here shooting Space Jam. So they went up to the runs, but Jordan literally picked my brother every day he went up there, but literally just took him under his wing and got my brother's game to a whole other level where he probably averaged like 2 points his freshman year, ended up coming back and averaging like 10 or 11 or 12. But by the time he was a senior, led the Pac-10 in scoring. But I think he cussed out Lou, so Lou might have hated. Again, he led the Pac-10 in scoring, didn't make all Pac-10 first team.
Wow.
It was some super janky shit. Right, but him and Dickerson used to go out and all that good stuff. So you tell me that, like, MJ seems like the type of dude, you know, if I'm Lou and he's calling me, telling me, yo, I got to rock with Gil, I'm going to listen to him.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Coach O a little bit. It seemed like from afar, when you talk about coolest coaches in the Pac-10, him by far and away. Always seemed like cool demeanor, just a good dude. I know he's just, you know, a good man, a guy you really want to play for. Not to take anything away from my coaches at UCLA, but as you look around the conference, I think we had Ernie Kane at that point. He had the box fade. Mm-hmm. So respect it, but just like, yo, this 2000 Chief, you got to get rid of the box. But what's your favorite Lou Dolson story?
He was fair. The story is he was like, you're talking about championship coach. He's done had every talented guard that, you know, when you're talking about the most talented guards coming, you know, arguably Arizona was up there at a point.
PGU, as you guys like to refer to yourself as.
So when you have, you know, Jason Garner, when you have all these guys coming in and he says all the positions are for grabs. Like, is it a real for grabs or are we just bullshitting it? You know what I mean? Is it one of these things? Or, you know, there nobody, because we had so much talent, he's saying that you guys are so talented, fight for your position. And it's like, oh, this is real. Like, you know, I had to hit Jason. Is this what he said? Is that a real thing? It's like, I think so. Oh, that. It was really. I started running 5 miles. I started getting in shape. I don't even want to play 5-on-5 with them dudes no more.
Yeah.
Like, y'all, this is war, right? Like, I don't even want to, like, show, like, this is chess now. So what I end up doing is I'm just chucking threes. When we play, I'm just a three-point shooter. I'm Klay Thompson. I'm working on my game all hours on 2-3. I'm breaking. Listen, it was to the point where they had to give me a key because I kept breaking the door.
Okay.
Like, you told me I have a real shot at starting. I'm breaking the door. I'm going in and working out, getting the feel for the rim, learning the dead. Like, it was, didn't go to, like, class was irrelevant at this point.
Your class was in McHale.
Like, yeah, it was one of those things where he gave me this reachable goal. So, but when I'm auditioning, you know how you play before this, like, it's like,
yeah.
There's this dead period where you're around each other, but there's not official.
Yeah.
So I'm just shooting threes. I would not go for a layup, fast break. I look like today's NBA. Fast break, shoot three, didn't dribble. I'm doing all that pretending and shit, right?
Yeah.
I'm shooting it, they was blocking it. I didn't care. Soon as it was official, first play, it was just one of those things. You get used to someone just shooting threes and threes only,
yeah.
And then practice starts and he pumped. Like, think about the pump fakes.
So it was a straight rope a dope,
okay. just rope a dope and just got out.
Okay, so you played with a lot of great dudes during your time at Arizona.
Whoa,
so.
When you talk about great, you mean like great like me? I'm just like great because they're great men.
You play with some players.
Like great men, I play with some great men that knew who to give the ball to. Like
NBA level talent though.
Yeah.
So who was your favorite player that you played with?
My favorite to play with was Jason Gardner.
Okay.
My roommate. He helped me get that position because, one, he picked me on his team.
Okay.
He had the first pick and he picked me.
Did he pick you because he didn't want to have to guard you, or what was the rationale behind it?
We were roommates, wouldn't be backcourt mates.
Okay.
I know that. Yeah, that's, yeah. That. And then from there, it was like we were so tight, Lamont Frazier, because he was that third, he was with me, that third guard. He ended up, getting hurt, so he had the red shirt, which they didn't actually give it to him. He lost a year.
Okay. I remember we played, you got kicked out the game. I don't know if you were there for that point. It might have been the year after you left.
Yeah, the year after I left. And then we had, the closest to after that would have been Luke Walton and Richard Jefferson.
Okay.
But that was usually because of Jason Gardner.
Okay.
He partied with him, not me. So.
Okay. All
right. but just playing, playing with him, all the guys were great. Okay.
What about Michael Wright?
What's he was name? Quiet. He was a quiet guy. He didn't really.
But he was a hooper.
No, Michael Wright was a hooper.
Beast.
Very great college guy. I can't even say he was just a great college guy. I just think he got drafted to the wrong team.
Okay.
At that time, he got drafted to the New York Knicks. He was undersized four, and they had all undersized fours. So, that's it.
It's funny, when you talk about basketball, people nowadays like to throw the term casual, but I feel like they do a lot of looking at pro basketball reference to these sites where they see guys' NBA numbers. Mm. And that doesn't always
translate.
Yeah, because I think of a guy like Salim. I remember talking to Dave Fizdale about Salim when I think Dave was with the Hawks with Mike Woodson. He's like, yo, Salim's great. Like, but him and Mike Woodson don't see eye to eye. So that's why he's not playing.
Yeah, that's very
good. The guys can be out of the league in a heartbeat. But Michael Wright to me was a guy that was just a beast on the court. Like you said, undersized four, but maybe in a different situation, his career pans out differently. But
yeah. Any other team besides the team that has three, four small four men.
Yeah.
I think like Othella Harrington was still there. Like all those guys were just. you're a young guy going to a veteran team that has your position.
Yeah. But I think a lot of people don't realize, oh man, he was trash, or he was a bust, or he was mid, or whatever they'll say. And it's like, dude, a lot of that shit, coaching philosophy, seeing eye to eye with the coach. But even you with Lute at Arizona, which is wild to me. Because traditionally, like if I got these McDonald's guys coming in, then I got you, Gil. Well, I'm not going to let you play over these dudes, because now it makes me look bad. Like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Just for the fans out there, when we talk about coaching, a great coach is not a great coach for everybody, right? They're a great coach for maybe a system, not individual type of talent. So we can show you how like somebody like Westbrook can average a triple-double every year, and then he goes to another coach and he looks like his whole game has left him, right? Steve Francis under Rudy T looked like God. They called him the franchise. His nickname, the franchise. That's like, you,
yep.
Right? He's on every highlight reel. He's a bona fide star. Rudy steps down. They bring in Jeff Van Gundy. Jeff Van Gundy is a high level coach. but not for that type of player. He'd never seen that type of player. He's never coached that type of player. So what he decides to do is make him a role player. Career went down. He never bounced out of it, right? He went from 21 and 6 to 15 and 6 or 16 and 6. So he took less shots, didn't gain more assists. It doesn't work like that. You would think 16 he averaged. No, same assists, yeah. Right? Just took 5 points out of his Western, and he gets traded to Orlando. Back to the top, 21 again. So you can see how just one coach who don't know your game or don't like your game can change everything about you.
Yeah.
Right? And that happens.
Oh, believe me, I dealt with it on a much smaller scale, but mm-hmm. coaching changes, I already know my shit's cooked. I'm going to go ahead and just get this degree and figure it out. Yeah. So, Gil, you played NBA playoff, you played in March Madness. In your opinion, who has a better postseason, NCAA or NBA?
Like, ask for what?
And that's what I want to get into, because for me, NBA playoffs, it is what it is. It breaks down how, you know, traditionally before Adam Silver came in with the plan, but first he's playing the AFC 2-7. Mm. Where college, to me, everybody at home is great for the pools and all that good shit. But these matchups, we always talk about the 5 versus 12 seeds, right? And 12's upsetting the 5. Like, well, how many times are I going to fuck this up? Because in theory, the way you're seeding this, it should pan out like that. But these are winner-go-home games. So a lot of times those 12 seeds aren't really 12 seeds. 12 seeds are much better seeds, mm-hmm. but we put them at 12 because we want to create that mystique of an upset.
I don't even know if it's a mystique. I think what ends up happening is they go off the strength of schedule.
Yeah.
Which means nothing.
That's even a myth for college basketball.
It's a myth. You don't know. Right? You just don't know. So you got this team that's, 20 and 10. This team that's, 28 and 2, and this 20 and 10 is about to whoop the fuck out of them,
yeah.
because of the style they play.
Exactly.
We're looking at records and what you got. It's very different,
And that's a lot of the thing that irked me about college is, like, some college coaches will duck smoke just to get to that 25-26 win threshold. Mm-hmm. So on paper, a team looks like it's great, but the reality is y'all ain't fucking played nobody mm-hmm. all year. And now you're going to get these teams who have, and maybe, like you said, they might be even like a 19 and 13 team or whatever it is, but they played, and they played those 13 losses very well. Mm-hmm. And now they come in and just bust that ass because it doesn't really mean anything.
And it's one game.
So I think I would ask you first from a viewing experience.
Viewing experience, you would say college.
Okay.
Because it's elimination. Now, if the NBA was elimination, you have a whole different problem. Because one game, meaning I just got to be perfect in one game, it'd be all over the place too.
Yeah, for sure.
it'd be all over, knowing that as opposed to
I got to play.
Because now I put all my eggs in one basket, so I'm really gonna. No one's subbing out. Fuck all that. Like, if I'm an eighth seed and I'm playing the number one seed, there's no subs. 5-6 man rotation at best. We're gonna grind it out. We're gonna try to figure out how to pull this win, because it's one game. All I need to win is one game. So when you have that situation in college, that college team that's ranked high, they have to play great every round. The other team, they just gotta play great once to knock that off.
So like I said, NCAA tournament is based on a lot of luck, seedings, all that good stuff. It's a lot of luck that goes mm-hmm. into it mm-hmm. in terms of seedings. Like, the best team doesn't always win.
No.
So would you like to see the NCAA adopt like a 3-game series for the championship? Like, look, you may get all the way to the championship game. These two teams, they got to play each other 3 times.
I think it should be three games.
Yeah.
It's fair. It's you're trying to push out the best, outcome. If the other team is that dominant, then they should be able to. And it'll generate more money.
Yeah.
Right? Exactly. Just say that. but it's one of those things where you're trying to really, like, heighten the game itself. So, 3 games for the championship would be a whole different ballgame.
I think it'd be fun. Like you said, more bread, break that, let that bread trickle down to the players. It gives fans, obviously doesn't really align with the Saturday, Monday schedule that they do for the championship game, but if you went Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday in a three-game series, or save it for the next, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you can do, you know, if when does it start? Friday, Wednesday?
So the championship Final Four is Saturday, Monday, usually.
Yeah, so Saturday, Monday, Wednesday. I mean, are we really caring about, I mean, it's school on Monday, right? But yeah.
I'm not going
so to. Then Tuesday and Wednesday shouldn't give a right.
Exactly. But play those three, let go 3 days in a row. You do it with the conference tournament.
Not even 3 days in a row. I mean, you might want to give them a rest in between. But, okay. You know, you're talking about a Monday, Wednesday type of deal.
Yeah. So I got to ask you now. College landscape has changed significantly with the NIL deals coming, and we've seen some ridiculous bags getting spread around to the top level players.
In basketball or just football?
Basketball, football.
Who's in basketball got great ones?
People getting bags.
Have you seen any numbers?
They're breaking backs.
Seriously?
I'm not in people's pockets. Uh-huh. Obviously, football is more marquee headline, but I think LSU gymnast, somebody's making the most bread off these deals. You got a woman who plays at Oregon who's making a ton of bread off the TikTok.
I know.
Like TikTok and getting all those marketing deals going. Yeah, it's a good time. It's a good time to be a college athlete, is all I'm saying.
Is it?
Yeah.
TikTok?
You can make bread off TikTok.
I know what I'm saying. You don't need an NIL deal to make bread off of TikTok.
But you need to be able to get brands to give you bread for those things. Back in the day, NCAA was not, they were literally pulling dudes' YouTube accounts down.
Yeah, yeah, you're
you know
right.
What I'm saying? So I'm just saying. So you set it up by leveraging the TikTok to not have the brands come in and break the bread. But if you were a top recruit in this era, would you get an NIL bag and go to college? Or go to the G League or overtime elite?
I'm a top recruit.
You're a top recruit.
Meaning most likely I'm guaranteed top five.
So I'm Arizona. I say, Gil, I got $500,000 for you to come play at Arizona for a year. Or I'm the G League or overtime elite. And I say, I got this $150,200 for you to come do it for a year.
I'm not going to the overtime elite for $150,000. I got $500,000 on the big program.
So let's say $150,000 and $150,000.
And it's overtime elite and
G League.
One of those G League too?
G League or overtime elite?
If everything is across the board, 150, 150, 150.
Yeah.
Top five pick, top five pick, top five pick, right? So I don't lose nothing. So we're going to make everything fair.
Yep.
Then I'm going to go to the G League.
Okay. And why would you do that?
Because when you take all three platforms. I mean, it would be G League overtime, then college would be last for me because in college, I'm in a college schedule. I'm in school. I'm in class.
Hypothetically.
But I'm in a college system. Well, with the G League, I'm around NBA. Everything. I'm around grown men. I'm gonna for that 6 months before the draft. I'm learning the NBA style, how to train, doctors, lift, travel, so I'll have a faster experience versus going to college and I'm on campus and I can't get to the gym because they're in class. And you know what I mean? It's just one of those things where I'm handicapped with information. So if I'm going to give myself the better chance, so if I take 19, I'm 19 here, 19 here, 19 here, when they're done with those 6 months and you say, all right, y'all face each other again, the better player is supposed to be the guy who's in the G League.
When you look at, you know, 18, 19-year-olds from a maturity standpoint, are these guys ready to go to that situation? It seems like college has a lot more structure just in terms of you got coaches on your ass, you got everybody's trying to monitor you to an extent. And make sure you stick to a routine, to a schedule, prepare you to be an adult. Versus now getting thrust into that adult fire where you're playing in the G League, you're playing with a lot of grown-ass men who really don't necessarily have a vested interest to want to help you succeed, right? Because you might be cutting into their bag. Mm-hmm. So does that factor in at all in the decision-making process?
No, I mean, in hindsight, what you said will be correct, but in reality, it's not. In reality, the worst situation will be college. For maturity.
Yeah.
In the NBA, it's grown men, right? So I'm around fathers and husbands. You know, there's still, you know, some husbands that's in the G League, unfortunately. Yeah. But you know, you have there, it's more of an adult versus college or versus high school. High school, you know, you're at home with your parents still. So, you know, that 150, you're not, it ain't really coming to you, right? That 150 is not really yours.
You better emancipate yourself and just take it.
That's what I'm saying, but that 150 is not yours. So you really don't have access. You're still a son,
yeah.
Right? Well, college, where you're supposed to mature at, is actually not going to happen because now you have money away from your parents and a whole college experience, which means all these kids that got away from their parents, they get to party and get drunk for the first time. So you have all the frat house parties, the sorority girl things, everyone's trying to drink a legal drink. And I'm pretty sure it's the biggest legal drinking place on earth.
Yeah,
it's college. Right. And now you have a lot of money in your hand.
Yeah.
Right? You have a lot of money in hand, so there's no f***ing keg orders. You can go there and get some Louis XIII. You can really do the shit up now.
Yeah.
So you're exposed more to dumb shit.
Yeah.
That's the reality. Hindsight, you go to college, you're not, no. Whoa. Give me $150,000 in college.
Yeah.
You give Luke Walton and Jason Garner and Richard Jefferson $150,000 while we were in college. Kegs. Like, listen. NBA, you're going to the club.
Yeah.
College, your house is the club.
Yeah.
So imagine I got $150,000 from NIL deals and I get to throw house parties.
Turned up.
Turnt.
New level.
Turnt.
When you present it like that, it makes a lot more. You're in the G League, you got those older vets or whatever going out and doing those things, you can't go to that club.
Yeah, you're not
you can try, but you're going to put yourself in a position where they're going to stop down on that shit real quick.
Yeah, you're young, yeah.
We're college, yeah, they ain't checking no IDs.
Yeah, there's not checking IDs. That's what I'm
Come
saying.
Come on so through, Gil.
That's what I said. It becomes the worst environment for you with an NIL deal.
Okay. So let's just say hypothetically you did go to college or you got to give advice to a top high school recruit or their parents about what to look for in a college program, what would you tell them?
One, all the parents that are committing to colleges, 9th grade, 10th grade, you're stupid. Right? I'm sorry. I know you want the tag. It's just dumb. The reason it's dumb is because you don't know what's going to develop in someone's game in the junior senior year, right? So I have a point guard for my future, which means nothing because if you were a sophomore and you signed and by the time you were a senior and they picked another senior guard that became bigger, but you're stuck. You're gonna have to transfer. That coach might not be there. And now you're stuck into a situation that he didn't recruit you. He's gonna recruit the players he likes. Now you got the what's the name portal, right?
Yeah.
Well, you put your name in the portal, you gotta remember you've been off the board for 2 years. So no one's paid attention to you for 2 years. You ain't been recruited for 2 years because you've already committed. So you've been off the board, so nobody's paid attention to you. Now you in the transfer, like it becomes a thing where wait to you're the end of your junior year, probably in your junior or in your senior year, because what happens is you get to actually see the board. You actually get to see who's there, right? If I'm a point guard, okay, and this school is recruiting me, what year is the point guard in front of me? Is he a freshman this year while I'm a senior? No, thank you, unless I know he sucks and I can just go in there and whoop his ass. Other than that,
yeah.
Right? You know, is it a senior? So when I'm coming in, he's leaving. What kind of system are they running? Forget the names. The names are good, but what kind of system are they running? Like if I'm girls basketball, girls basketball, right? I'm a high level player and I'm a scoring player. I can look at UConn, right? The big school. I'm going to look at their, what they're averaging and say, they run a slow system. Right, so we're all fighting here, So, the best player on the team is going to be at somewhere about 13 to 16. Or I can go to a high level, a fast program that's top 4 or 5 in scoring. They're pushing out 70, 80 points. The number one option's averaging 30. Number two option's averaging 24. The third option's averaging 19. Right? You know what I mean? All three players are eating. Mean all three players are, you know, they have a chance to make it to the next level. Right? You're trying to heighten your chance to make it to the next level. So you're going to pick teams. You're going to pick schools that has your style and your game. If not, you're going to have to adjust to that coach's style.
Yeah.
Every coach is not a player's coach. Some coaches, their ego of winning is bigger than
their coach's coach. Right?
Yeah, their team success.
I'm trying to keep my job.
I'm trying to keep my, yes.
At the end of the, I'm not trying to send you to the league.
And
I'm trying
fired.
To keep my job. Yeah. I'm trying to keep your ass here for you. Oh, you're killing right now. I need this for 3 more years.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm gonna get an extension off of it. And that's what I think a lot of guys don't realize when they come in. And some coaches, that seem like, I think of somebody like Damon Stoudemire, who just got the Georgia Tech job. Mm-hmm. Damon coming from an NBA background, playing in the league, seemed like more interested. All right, if I got guys I know I can get to that next level, I'm gonna really try to highlight their talents to get them there. Some guys are more just seasoned college coaches. Like, I'm just trying to get that next extension. I need 25 wins in my extension.
Okay, so, you know, since you used that school, we're going to start off by saying Georgia Tech, eat shit for firing Josh Pastner, Arizona alumni, best coach, best player coach ever.
Okay.
And then congratulations for hiring Damon Stoudemire, who's also an Arizona legend.
Okay.
You know,
they made good on it. They made good on it.
You know, they made good. You know, it's one of those things where, how dare you? Then next, like, okay, all right, cool. But yeah, you know, somebody like Damon, who's a player's coach, who was a scoring coach, and I mean a scoring player, you know, so guards, if you're a scoring guard, that's the type of coach you would want to play for, because that was his style of play.
Yeah.
You know, Salim Stoudemire, you're talking about, you know, when you're talking about your game is like Steph Curry's, his was too. You know, coming down, shooting, you know, he averaged 20-something, his nickname is Mighty Mouse. So you're talking about a coach that was a shoot-first type of guy, right? So if you're a guard that plays the same way, that's the type of coach you want to play for, because whatever offense he's running will be that style. He's not going to be a guy who scored 30, 40 points, and then he has a big man's offense. It sounds stupid.
No, that makes sense. All right, we talked a lot about college, but now let's shift it over back to the NBA. You had a very interesting post on your Instagram about the Ja Morant situation, you know, calling him a philanthropist for his contributions to local communities.
50,000.
That was a lot of... First off, you know, I'm not a fan, and I think everybody's trying to point the finger at the club owner or as the person who did it. We don't know who released the photos yet.
The club owner.
You think he did it?
TMZ paid him, or New York Post paid him.
Because my hypothesis is it's a disgruntled stripper who didn't get any of that other 50K.
No, that actually came from the camera.
But what I'm saying is, hit the security room, oh, okay. Jada have no dollars for me. I'm gonna get it.
No. I've been to a couple of two.
I'm just saying.
I've been to a couple of two. Usually,
if you're that third option, if you weren't the one or two.
Usually, what would happen is a smart club will make the girl share that, so one girl doesn't take $50,000 and quit.
Okay.
Right, because you know you.
I'm not versed in this
yeah,
world.
So what ends up happening is usually you try to make everyone split it, especially when you're talking about a large. I mean, listen, that was amazing. Did you see that? I'm shocked, because it's like, why didn't I think of?
That's a lot of ones on the ground.
Dude, whole floor cover. But he had fun.
It appears so.
But who wouldn't do it? Like, when I say who wouldn't, everybody in his status that makes that kind of bread, that's what it looks like. Just, we got to see it because the owner, for him to do that, they probably threw him $100,000,
$200,000. Is it worth it, though?
As a club owner? No. You know why? Because the man that you just gave the New York Post a picture of did drop $50,000 in your club. I'm pretty sure when you look back through the numbers, that was probably the most money by one individual player, and you just outed him in front of the world, you're not going to get that type of love ever again. So that, for the rest of your business, you might as well think, you know, what you just did to this young individual. He's never going to go in there again. And most all the NBA players that comes, because now that club knows type players like that are coming in there. Players know you're just going to out me. You just did it to him. No, thank you.
It's going
to
be a bunch of pennies on the ground now.
Private room, man.
Nickels.
I mean, what I'm saying is a private room, he's by himself. And, like, you know, we can sit here and try to, like, judge. He's by himself.
Not breaking any laws.
That's why I was stupid.
Give it back to the local community.
But it's also like anything. It's just a way to just try to smear a person's name. That's really... That's all it really was. Like, you know, when we talked about it, there's no crime. This is self-inflicted. Embarrassing? Yes. Let him deal with the embarrassment. But all the extra stuff that's going on is not, there's nothing you can do. You can't do anything. But that's why I went as the PR.
Yeah.
I'm PR.
Johnny Dyer.
You know, this is the PR. This is what, you know, what was that kid, Kyle Ritter or whatever?
Rittenhouse?
Yeah, Rittenhouse. And when media wrote about him, how did they write? Oh, he's a hero. He's a, you know, he just, what? Yeah, I can say the same thing.
Yeah, he did.
He's a hero.
I've never seen him drop a triple-double, so
facts.
I'm going to be real.
But, you know, he's going to be fine. He, like, he only got suspended 2 games.
So 2 games, he's supposed to miss 4 more, so it'll be four, 6 total.
No. Let me show you how this works. See, this is why.
I'm just saying that's what the Grizzlies said. At least he'll be away from the team for a total 6.
Okay, so let's just. It's me here.
Okay.
All right.
This is your show.
So we got 2 game suspension. 4 games away from the team, which means he's getting paid these four games.
I'm just talking about missing 6 games.
But the reason that you're having him miss the other 4 games is this. The 3 of those games, the last 3, are on the road, right? So you had 1 home game, and then you got 3 road games. So you're like, well, with this much attention, we don't want him on the road, right? Yeah. So the media can bash him, the fans can bash him. That's not what we're going to do. What we're going to do is we're going to wait till the team comes back home. So he gets all of this Memphis love. Let him receive this Memphis love for the next week and week and a half, because their schedule now will be, after they get off that road trip, they got 7 out of 8 games in Memphis.
Okay.
So they have 4 straight games at home, then Atlanta, then games at home, and then we're hitting April. So Ja really gets to be in a safe environment where he gets to get his game back. The only time you can really talk about him is from the TV side of it, which mentally he ain't gonna be able to hear none of that. So he really gets to get his mind, get his confidence back, get his swagger back before he actually goes on the road. So the reason the other 4 games was added is because they're on the road, and it's like, no, just
wait. So you think he'll be back after, once they get back home?
He should be back Golden State.
Okay.
Golden State at home.
So that brings me to my next line of question. You got Dylan Brooks, you got Draymond Green. The beef that the NBA really needed, right? Like, it was getting a little boring. Like, you know, we're making this playoff push, but I'm locked in now. Like, you know, I appreciate Dylan Brooks, what he's doing for the league and putting himself out there. But I want to ask you, he's been taking shots at current guys, he's been taking shots at former players. I think about Carmelo and Dwight Howard when they asked if the Grizzlies needed some veteran leadership. So does Dylan Brooks have too much dip on his chip right now, or do you support his trash talking?
Listen, I mean, he's a defensive player, right? He's on the defensive side. He's one of those guys that does, he's like Draymond Green, that does the grunt work, right? He's the grunt work. He's the guy that, you know, he's not necessarily an enforcer, but he's one of those guys that's the toughest side of Memphis, which is great, because he knows if he talks shit about you, right, you're gonna come at him with all your offense. That's what he's challenging. He's trying to tap into being a great defender and a great stopper. So he's taking that challenge of stopping the player's best. Like, yo, Kyrie can't do this. You know, Luka can't do this. So when he matches up, they have it in their minds to, all right, I'm about to go at you. And he really gets to test who he is and, you know, what type of defender he is. And I think this right here is because he's vocal. He starts shutting down people, when you're talking about first team all defense, you know, next year and all, he's going to be up there because we know him now.
Okay. So it's a PR move.
It's not a PR move. He just
he's benefiting from the PR.
He's benefiting from it, but I think because of the limelight now, and he's really like, and you can see it's not this aggressive stuff. Like the funniest, like I seen the temperament when, you know, him and Draymond, he scores, and then, you know, they bump, and then Draymond's doing the whole
ball in the face.
That is like that. That's what makes it all funny, because it's like. It's like the fight, but not the fight.
Well, they're not gonna sacrifice this. You've already said they're not giving up them game checks.
That's what I said. But those are the funny thing when it's like the elbow and you're trying to pretend that you ain't doing nothing and you're doing it. That is the funniest part about NBA players. Like, we have beef, but we don't really have beef type of, you know, thing. Yeah. And you know, like I want to see them in the playoff. That's gonna be an amazing series.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Just for them too.
The script writers will make that happen.
It's just them too, and it's like, you know, sometimes you just watch a series just for certain players.
Oh, for sure. I think we're locked in. Obviously, we're going to be locked in with the Grizzlies-Warriors series if it happened anyways. But now I think the casual average fan who's just not seeing this beef and lives for those type of moments.
Like, it reminds me of like Karl Malone and Dennis Rodman back in the day. Just, you know, like when Dennis Rodman would just hump him, slap him on the booty, and just random shit that just has nothing to do with basketball, but it irritated the hell out of Karl Malone.
No, some of my favorite viewing experience back in the day were just watching Dennis Rodman on the court and the shit he would do.
Dude, just irritated. Just irritated. I'm like, what's wrong with this dude? He's just, I like it.
All right, Gil, well, I appreciate you, and I appreciate everyone else watching as well. This has been another episode of No Chill with Gilbert Arenas. We'll be back with more very soon.